from St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking. Unlike other people who run in heavily Democratic or Republican House districts, Nick Kimball did not have an arduous road to get to Jefferson City. But the St. Louis Democrat could encounter very difficult challenges when he's sworn into office in January. Kimball joins us on the latest episode of the Politically Speaking podcast to talk about his priorities once he gets to Jefferson City and about his desire to enhance city-county cooperation from a statewide level. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, the definitive show about Missouri politics.
My promise to St. Louis was that I would do the absolute most for each and every person, starting with those who have the very least.
What I wanted to do was look and see what other states are doing.
We have to be willing to change those laws, that they are balanced and they affect everybody equally.
As somebody that grew up in the St. Louis area, in North St. Louis County, I didn't know any lawyers growing up.
We got to find long-term solutions to make government better, but also to be able to provide services to people.
I don't want to leave that federal money that we've been leaving all these years on the table.
We need to be spending this money to take care of Missourians.
I thought we accomplished a lot this year, but a lot more needs to be done.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, St. Louis Public Radio political correspondent Jason Rosenbaum. Joining us from Mid-Missouri, she covers everything state government and state politics for St. Louis Public Radio.
Sarah Kellogg.
And joining us in studio today, he is the representative-elect for Missouri's 82nd House District.
Nick Kimball.
Welcome. You are going to be the famous or infamous Donna Behringer successor in the Missouri House. I mean, she's not infamous. We all know and love Donna.
Big shoes to fill. She's been around politics for South City politics, I should say, for a while.
Tell us a little bit about, before we ask you about your biography, explain what the boundaries of the 82nd District are, because they have changed since redistricting considerably.
Absolutely. So it's Southwest St. Louis City, colloquial referred to as South City for the most part, but essentially goes along the western boundary of the city limits. So Afton to Maplewood right there. So it takes in Ellendale along River to Pear. 44 Manchester is the northern boundary, and then it goes oscillates between Kings Highway, Macklin, Brandon, down the to Gravois there, so along Kings Highway on the eastern boundary.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and what you were doing before you ran for office.
Yeah. Professionally, I work in healthcare consulting, so project management and efficiency, so potentially either super frustrating for government or good for government, but that's my professional career, sales, recruiting, client management, along those lines in the healthcare industry. And then politically speaking, I should say, have volunteered and been around South City politics since I was 15. Actually started working for Donna when she was an alderwoman down at City Hall.
Yes. Behringer's trajectory through politics has been very interesting. She was my alderwoman for when I moved into St. Louis Hills. And then when Michelle Kratky termed out of the House, she ran for her state rep seat. And what is interesting is that, like, both of your trajectories to get to the Missouri House are very similar. Like, you did not face a arduous primary, in which is sort of the election in the 82nd District. Were you surprised that, like, filing passed this year and you were the only one to sign up?
Yes and no. I think a lot of the folks who were considering it, I've built relationships with, and fortunately, driving down to Jeff City, you know, spending 4, 5, 6 months down there and the headaches it brings, I think a lot of folks in the area think city politics is more appealing. But, you know, we're going to work hard to win that primary regardless. It is one of the more Republican-leaning districts in the city, so I think that also, gave people pause.
Well, that was actually going to be my next question. A lot of people on the show, Sarah, seem to like read our minds, which is great.
It's helpful for us, for sure.
It is. One of the things that Representative Berenger often told me when she was either running for alderwoman or state rep is the 82nd district probably has the most Republicans in the city of St. Louis. A lot of them are not stupid. They know that, like, their voice will matter more if they vote in Democratic primaries. How does that kind of change the way you kind of navigate and represent your constituency? Because a lot of your St. Louis city colleagues, their districts are like 90% Democratic. Yours is not. And your Republican constituents are still going to ask you to do things for them. So I want you to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think it all comes down to building relationships. Growing up in the district, I know a lot of those Republicans. I went to school with them. I went to friends with their kids. I mowed their lawn, delivered pizzas, what have you. So I think that helps. I consider myself a center-left moderate person. I don't go around to the fish fries or various things on the Hill in South City talking about partisan issues or partisan politics. Really just, I think gearing what we're speaking about to how are we going to grow the city of St. Louis and make sure it can be more appealing, grow the tax base. Those are fairly bipartisan issues for most folks. Sure, there are folks who want to talk partisan politics, and that's fine. But there's a lot of Mike Kehoe, Republican statewide folks who are not into the new top of the ticket at the Republican Party, MAGA, Trump politics, but they still like moderate Republicans, Mitt Romney-type fashion. But as you said, vote in their local elections Democrat.
The first few weeks after an election usually features orientation with your fellow freshmen. How has that been going so far?
It's been going great. We were up about 2 weeks ago for caucus on the Democratic side. And then the week after that had, 54 folks up there, Republican and Democrat, for orientation, kind of a standard onboarding process mixed with a little politics. But, no one knew who was Republican, who was Democrat. So there was a lot of relationship building, a lot of getting to know folks, people just appreciative to be up there and serve and begin getting to know their colleagues.
You're going to be serving in the House supermajority, but Representative Berenger found ways to make an impact either in the committee process or through working with Republicans. How confident are you that there could be things that bridge partisan divides? You've kind of spoken that a little bit as far as St. Louis focus, but I'm curious your thoughts on kind of more statewide issues.
Yeah, I think there is quite a bit of opportunity, good government, growing the state, working to recruit and get jobs in and around the St. Louis region, greater Missouri, outstate Missouri, Kansas City, Springfield, Columbia. I think a big focus should be on retaining our young folks and recruiting other young people from either cities that are too expensive or they want to come to, a mid-sized city where showing up really matters. So I think there's a lot of opportunity to cross those divides. I think the 20% of issues that get talked about in Jefferson City are national, right? Those catch the headlines, but there's a lot of work, especially with the hopeful incoming speaker, Representative Patterson, to really cross the aisle and do some good things to grow the state.
Moving on to an issue that I think both Jason and I think are going to take center stage in the legislature this year, something that your colleagues may confront in those coming months is a push to place a gubernatorial board in charge of the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department. This is something that police officer associations want, but that St. Louis Mayor Shara Jones strongly opposes, as well as the chief of the police. How are you approaching this issue?
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a tricky issue. I know that's Governor-elect Kehoe's main priority. My mom's a St. Louis City cop, has been for 32 years. I'm certainly very supportive of law enforcement. We need more police in the city of St. Louis. It's great we got them a pay raise. They certainly deserve more. But we need to figure out a way to enhance recruitment. I'd like to see proposals of what that final bill looks like to how that's going to help recruitment, I should say. I think there's different ways to structure the board that looks different than it may have in the past. You know, former Mayor Slay was a big advocate of local control. I think folks in outstate Missouri, Peavely, would not take too kindly to the state coming in and saying, hey, we would like to take over your police department. So I think there's going to be a good debate on the issue. Like I said, very interested to hear those negotiations, sit down with the chief of police. I think last year he requested to give him some time. He's only known local control. So interested to see how those negotiations play out.
Yeah, he's spoken up twice against the bill, right after he was hired, pretty much is when it came out. And then he did it so a year later, saying, you know, we still want more time for that to work. And Jones has noted that Kansas City has so-called state control of the police department, but that their crime rates have actually gone up while the city's statistics have gone down. Does that provide counter evidence that this type of system actually makes the city safer?
I'm not sure about safer. I think you can kind of swing statistics many different ways. I certainly agree with that point. I think the main issue is confidence in the local control. I think folks pretty clear. I was at a neighborhood meeting last night. Violent crime is down in the city. Property crimes are going up. There seems to be some contention over how those are counted. So I think how the mayoral race in the spring in the city certainly affects what this conversation looks like. I think the statistics and the explaining of those statistics and how crime is counted will you know, put a spin on that conversation. But, you know, we have two opposing viewpoints, I should say, or, you know, two examples from Kansas City to St. Louis of local control and not local control to go off of.
Several people have pointed out that the push for state control stalled out when Francis Slay and Lyda Crewson were in office, but now it seems to have picked up momentum with Tashara Jones as mayor. And they say bluntly that it could have to do with the fact that those other two mayors are white and the current mayor is black. What do you think of that?
I think there's certainly some truth to that for some folks. I don't think there's any denying that. I think the bigger issue to give folks the benefit of the doubt, or at least, you know, folks who are having those arguments, is the defund the police movements and the association that Mayor Jones has with the progressive side of the Democratic Party. I know she's talked about how supportive she is of law enforcement, and I believe her. It's just going to come. I think that's the main association with it over the progressive movement and where that goes, if that has died down in the city or not.
You mentioned other possible structures that are different from before. And one of the things that I have brought up as a potential compromise here is not necessarily putting a gubernatorial board in charge of the police department, but having it similar to St. Louis County, where there is a board of police commissioners that's appointed by the mayor. And I actually brought this up to a governor-elect Kehoe earlier this month, and this is what he had to say about that hypothetical idea.
Listen, anybody who knows me knows that we're going to try to find the best solution that can get as many people on board as possible. The police, specifically the FOP, the cops in St. Louis, are very important to me. So their opinion is what matters as we look at other options. But certainly if there's something that still protects our men and women and gives them the resources that we can get more people on board, it's something I would look at.
That is Governor-elect Mike Kehoe responding to one of my questions about putting a board of police commissioners appointed by the mayor in charge of overseeing the St. Louis Police Department instead of a gubernatorially appointed board. What's kind of your reaction, not only to that idea, but to the governor-elect's comments?
think the governor elects a reasonable guy, and I very much agree with those comments. You need to find a way to, you know, a Democratic city to trust whatever happens at a Republican supermajority state level. At the end of the day, the St. Louis police officers, folks like my mother, are charged with protecting and serving the city of St. Louis. You know, need to find out a solution that makes everyone happy. So, welcome his comments. I think, as you said, there are different ways to spin it. There's different ways to have local control. I think at the end of the day, whatever good or bad happens with at the St. Louis City Police Department level, citizens will go to City Hall to say, hey, can you answer for better or worse for this? So there certainly needs to be some accountability at the local level, because I would be shocked if something negative were to happen that they would go to a state-controlled board to ask them to answer for it.
I want to talk about education policy for a bit. You'll represent the St. Louis public school system, which has faced some leadership and operational turmoil recently. What do you think the state should do to assist SLPS?
Yeah, I think an audit would be good. I only caught a portion of your all's interview with some of the St. Louis Board of Education members. But at the end of the day, we have to get more kids and families to stay in the city of St. Louis. In Southwest St. Louis City, the 82nd District, you have a good amount of folks in Catholic parochial schools, private schools. You have a good amount of folks in charter schools. You have a good amount of folks in SLPS. And those numbers have certainly balanced out more than when I went to grade school at St. Gabe's. That's important to keep in mind, but there shouldn't have to be a conversation where folks love living in South City, love the city, but they feel they need to move for better schools for their children.
You mentioned the Politically Speaking episode we had with SLPS board members Matt Davis and Tony Cousins. Davis made this comment about how elected officials who represent the city of St. Louis just don't seem to be making the school district a major priority.
Until the voters start to hold everybody running for office in the city of St. Louis to talk about public schools, it's never going to change. And for decades, they don't have to talk about it. They'll say it, they'll brush it off. Oh, the school district's a mess. Oh, the Board of Education's terrible. Oh, you know, this superintendent. But they don't actually want to sit there and engage on a real basis. You know, in Maplewood, your mayor and your superintendent, they know everything that's going on in all the schools all the time. Mm-hmm. None of our elected officials, with maybe a small exception of a couple handfuls, even have anything to do with the school district. And that has been one of our frustrating things. I think we just need to continue to change the narrative. If you're running for office in this city, you have to know something about the schools and show some level of support.
That was St. Louis Public Schools Board of Education Vice President Matt Davis on a recent episode of Politically Speaking. What do you think of his comments there?
I don't disagree with him. I mean, there's a lot of finger pointing, name calling in St. Louis city politics. I don't have to tell you all that. I think that's part of the regionalism and factionalism we deal with. But I've reached out to Matt. They were nice enough to host a kind of listening session that I unfortunately couldn't attend, but we're looking to try to get coffee and go over that, hear what they need from the state, hear what they need to hear or what they need in support from their elected officials. I'm a big meet in the middle guy, so I completely agree. We have to advocate. Our St. Louis City public schools should be top of the line. They should be top notch. No one should be leaving the city because they feel that their child, whether it be true or untrue, perceived notion or not, that their children can't get a quality education in the city of St. Louis.
You mentioned an audit. I know that had been talked about given that the superintendent left and there had been questions about how certain administrators were being paid. Can you talk a little bit more about why you would want to see an audit and what you would want that state audit by the Republican state auditor, Scott Fitzpatrick, to look for?
Well, from my understanding, they're doing an internal audit. I think a number of elected officials in the city have called for a state audit. You know, without wasting taxpayer dollars too much, I think an audit from multiple folks would be good just to increase trust. One audit is probably fine, but if you get, Scott looking at an audit from his point of view, quote unquote, Republican, unfortunately, and, I think there's people who would trust that over the internal audit, and you have the internal audit that folks might trust more than Scott's audit. I think both would be good, level set the playing field, and then talk about how we improve public schools and we get more kids in the city of St. Louis.
Just to follow up on that, I understand why there are some Democratic officials in St. Louis who are skeptical of Scott Fitzpatrick coming in, given that he is a Republican, as we mentioned in the last segment. There is some distrust of Republicans. But I have to say, from my experience, Auditor Fitzpatrick seems to be a pretty straight shooter when it comes to auditing things, and he actually has gone after Republicans when he thinks that they're doing wrong. Like, Sarah and I remember very fondly how he and Andrew Bailey kind of went to legal war over the fiscal note of the abortion initiative. So should that give people some assurance that he'll look at this in a relatively even-handed way?
I think so. I completely agree with you all. But there are some folks who don't feel that way, and that's why I say I think there should be two audits. But I completely agree with you. I think he's a good faith actor, plays to both sides, and makes sure to protect those dollars for the state taxpayers.
How do you plan to approach efforts to expand charter schools throughout the state? That's often been an idea that's divided Democrats, especially in St. Louis, which has a pretty extensive network of charter schools.
Yeah, I think we need to get more kids in the state of Missouri and the city of St. Louis, right? I don't think we should be shutting schools down in the city of St. Louis, but we shouldn't necessarily be opening ones up when we cannot fill the space with our current schools. So my understanding that many parts of the state have gone to four-day school weeks due to not having the teachers or resources that they need. I think public education is a cornerstone of this country. We should figure out ways to fix it, improve it, give them the resources they need. I think you can look, folks can find their own, dive into the statistics, find what they want to find from, was this successful, was it not? I think it really is about growing the state population and specifically growing the St. Louis region.
Earlier this year, lawmakers passed an education bill that calls for more money to flow to public schools, but actually following through in the long term on that could be challenging, especially if the state budget situation deteriorates. How worried are you about the long-term sustainability of K-12 funding in Missouri?
Pretty worried. I think that's a fair critique of that bill. I know folks didn't vote for it because of the fiscal note and because of the financial responsibility. I know a big part of the lottery, recent amendments that have passed, sports betting, we need to make sure that to increase confidence and give public education the dollars they need. I think on doors, that was the most prominent point that people brought up. Can you explain, why this money isn't guaranteed to go to public education? We need to make sure we're not just keeping levels as is, but increasing those dollars and not pulling one over on the people of Missouri.
We'll be right back after this quick break with State Representative-elect Nick Kimball. And we're back on Politically Speaking with State Representative-elect Nick Kimball. He is a Democrat who represents a portion of St. Louis City. So I want to talk about another issue that you may encounter when you get sworn in, and that is how Republicans are going to react to the passage of Amendment 3, which legalized abortion in Missouri. As we are recording this on November 26th, there is a court case that is moving through the process that I'm not a lawyer, I'm not a judge, but reading the constitutional amendment, I think a lot of abortion restrictions are about to come crashing down. I think that's a fair assumption. And I think Republicans are not going to be happy about that. And what do you kind of expect the GOP supermajority to do on that issue when they come back into session?
That's a good question. I think while they try to work out their speaker situation, I think that is the cause of a lot of the major infighting. Representative John Patterson talked about how the will of the voters should prevail. We shouldn't be overturning, regardless of outcome, whether you're for something or against something, what the citizens of Missouri pass. He's being challenged for his speakership for that, among other things. So I'm going to take him at his word, but I think there will be a ton of bills, amendments, and from my understanding, there would need to be another statewide referendum or ballot initiative to reverse that, given that that was the way it happened. I think that's a separate conversation of should we govern by statewide ballot initiatives, and I know IP reform initiative petition process, I'm sure will come up again in this cycle.
In that vein, you know, a lot of Republicans feel that abortion is morally wrong and they don't feel that the respect the will of the people argument holds water. But, you know, Amendment 3 passed thanks to just a stronger support in rural and exurban areas. What do you think the public reaction would be if lawmakers put something else on the ballot?
I think it would be the same to reversing other ballot initiatives. You know, Clean Missouri, we'll put an asterisk by that. But folks, I don't think take too kindly to asking your opinion on something and then saying, okay, cool, thanks, we're going to do what we want to do anyway. I don't think that goes over well in our friendships or relationships. I don't think folks will like that. I think it's a separate conversation. You basically took one extreme of no abortions without rape, incest, life of the mother, no considerations for those things, one of the strictest in the country, and trying to find some middle ground, which is what I think this this ballot initiative does.
Another comment that opponents of Amendment 3 put forward is that voters were fooled by what Amendment 3 really did. You've talked to your constituents. Were they fooled?
I don't think so. I think Amendment 3 passed. They got more votes than I did in the district. So I think folks were very clear. I know there was a portion of the opposition campaign that talked about some transgender issues. Talked to a few lawyers. From my understanding, that was not necessarily the case. But I think Jason mentioned that I know there'll be quite a bit of legal action that judges will have to decide on that.
Yeah, just to put some context about that, the anti-side of the Amendment 3 fight said over and over again that based off their interpretation of the language, it would remove the state ban on gender transition surgery for minors. Here would be my counter argument to that. Their argument kind of stems from the idea that there have been people who have publicly said that gender-affirming care is reproductive health care. First of all, that is meaningless when it comes to court cases. Like, judges do not take into consideration what lawmakers say on the floor when interpreting laws. So it's very unlikely they're going to take into consideration what advocacy groups say. But, like, there's a basic logical flaw in this. Not all gender transition surgery affects reproduction. If you get top surgery, you can still reproduce. And I think that's, and I'm not trying to say that all gender transition surgery doesn't affect reproduction, because some of it does, but that seems to be like a pretty big flaw in that argument. Like, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I'm not going to pretend to be an expert or on gender-affirming care, transgender issues. But I do think when you asked you earlier if people were fooled, I do think Amendment 3 would have passed by a wider margin had that, in my opinion, slightly dishonest campaign for that not been at the forefront. I saw more signs go up in the St. Louis area once that aspect of the conversation was introduced than anything else.
Well, I also want to talk about why, like, the anti-side say that, like, the pro-side misled people. And they point specifically to some ads that had people who had miscarriages saying, based off the law right now, they would be concerned that they would be able to get miscarriage care in Missouri. And the anti-side said they pointed to statutes that said that, like, miscarriage care is not encompassed in the abortion ban that passed in 2019. The counter argument that a lot of doctors would put forward is that if there's even a small percentage chance that the fetus is still alive after a miscarriage, then not only would they get in trouble from like a medical license level, they could go to jail. There would be criminal penalties. And so that creates a disincentive for doctors to even do miscarriage care. And I could understand like why anti-side is a little pissed off about that argument, but like doctors will tell you that like they would send people to Illinois rather than do those cases because of that aforementioned fear. So what, that's more of an observation than a question, but like, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I that certainly came up on the doors. You know, it's a pretty Catholic area in the 82nd. Folks are split on the issue, though. I think people thinking that all Catholic folks are one way or the other, it's mistaken. It's about a 50-50 issue. But we've seen in other states, I think there was a young woman in Georgia who just passed away, unfortunately, due to some of that ambiguity and not getting the care that she needed. I know there's folks, it seems like almost weekly in Texas, who are having a similar situation. So I think doctors, right, that's kind of gets back to the crux of the argument. Doctors should be trying to protect all life, right? The baby, the mother. But there are a ton of situations, and I'm not an OBGYN, I'm not a doctor, but a ton of situations where there has to be a decision, unfortunately. And I think a lot of these folks want to have children, want to have families, and it can affect their future over that. So that ambiguity is the problem, right?
You mentioned kind of this like mini storyline that's going on with incoming House Speaker John Patterson. He is being challenged now by State Representative Justin Sparks, primarily because of what you mentioned, that he said on the campaign trail that people should respect the will of the people on this issue. Since then, he's been quoted by the Kansas City Star saying, there's no amendment that's passed that can't be changed or approved on. It does seem like he is getting pressure to do something. What that something is kind of unknown at this point. Do you think that Speaker Patterson is going to hold firm here? Do you think he'll be pressured to put something on the floor that either completely repeals or replaces Amendment 3?
I've met incoming Speaker Patterson. I think he's an honest man. I'm going to take him at his word of him respecting the will of the voters. I'm sure he will be pressured. I know he's being pressured now. What he does with that and what that, for lack of a better term, sausage making looks like, I think that's in the majority caucus's decision.
In the last topic of the show, I want to talk about a topic that you put as, I think, the number one issue on your website, and that is city-county cooperation. And one of the things you mentioned specifically is you want to grow the St. Louis metro area, and that includes the city and county working together more. If you had a magic wand, how would that city, what would that city-county cooperation look like?
Yeah, great question. That is certainly the number one issue. We've got to grow St. Louis. I think Indianapolis, Nashville, there's some cities to look to across the country where regional cooperation was prioritized decades ago, and they're reaping the benefits of that. As many of you all know, there's a ton of municipalities out there, specifically in St. Louis County. I think there's different proposals. I know Better Together went down in flames for various reasons, so we don't need to bring that up or rehash
that. No. We are going to rehash that because that's my next question. It's been about 6 years since Better Together came about, which would have created a metro government that governed both the city and the county. It went down in flames for a lot of reasons. I think making Steve Stenger the emperor of St. Louis was a bad idea. But frankly, it had a lot of opposition for a lot of other reasons, too. But I think that the discussion about city-county cooperation has stalled since then, which I think is unfortunate because I think there are some real ways the city and the county could functionally work together. How do you move on from Better Together in a productive way?
I think it's a changing St. Louis city, right? For a while, it was the third rail of St. Louis politics, something that everyone knows needs to get finished, but no one wants to talk about or be the person that sticks their head out there. That's one of the main reasons I ran, to get it in the conversation more and to figure out what we can do to advance it. I think folks, and this is hard in St. Louis, as you all know, but folks need to be willing to say it's okay if I don't have the power at the end of the day. But we have to condense some of these municipalities, have to work together as a county and city government to do those things.
What do you mean by, like, consolidating the municipalities? Because, like, I think I understand what you mean, and that would primarily be a St. Louis County function. At the same time, though, as much as I would love it for, like, Richmond Heights, Clayton, Maplewood just to become one city, there's going to be a lot of opposition from people in Clayton, for example, of absorbing those two other cities. So it stands to reason that, like, that opposition is going to cascade throughout the county, regardless of where you are. So what do you kind of mean that from that by consolidation on a functional level?
On a functional level, you know, there's a ton of police departments, there's a ton of fire departments, there's a ton of forestry departments. A lot of this, there's a lot of red tape. There's a lot of different, if someone wants to open a business, depending on what line, what municipality, where they fall on the city-county divide there, wherever they're, you know, what side of Del Mar, what side of River de Pere. There's different rules, so I think we can work together to make it easier for folks to streamline government, work to consolidate resources so we do have more police officers, we do have more forestry folks to trim trees. I think that's more of what I'm getting at.
What do you think the reaction of the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department would be if, like, you had the magic wand and then the next day they combined with St. Louis County Police Department to be one police department?
That might be a bigger issue than local control.
Why is that a bad idea? Wouldn't you be able to, like, have more money and more resources at your disposal if you had, like, one major police department as opposed to two?
Yeah, I think it comes down to folks, the fiefdom, right, conversation we go back to. I don't think it's a bad idea. I don't have a specific proposal to outline, but I'm sure folks, you know, you have to ask folks at Guns N' Hoses tomorrow, and I'm sure we'll be talking about that.
Okay, here's what I think the reaction to that would be from St. Louis County Police Department. They would be like, and with all due respect to your mom, they would be like, we do not want to absorb a inferior police department like St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department. They probably see it as inferior to St. Louis County. And I'm sure that I'm sure that St. Louis City police officers see the county as a bunch of, like, spoiled, lazy police officers that patrol Wildwood while they're doing real police work. Am I wrong on that?
I think that among them, I think that's what the conversation would be. I'll fight for the city of St. Louis. I think they're a great police force, but I do think there would be a lot of back and forth, a lot of animosity, a lot of opposition to that. But I think that's where you need leadership.
Well, okay, so I kind of got on a rabbit hole there. That was fun, but, like, one of the things that's been brought forward as an idea is having St. Louis City become a municipality within St. Louis County. And while that would not solve, like, every problem, it could mean that the St. Louis County would then be responsible for, you know, the Parks Department, recording deeds, the Finance Department, certain county functions that are done by the city that would then kind of be absorbed by St. Louis County. Now, again, I don't know if that's a universally popular idea. I think you would probably have to also think about, like, expanding the county council by, like, three seats to make sure the city has a voice on there, because then they would be dominated by people that lived in St. Louis County by that. But what do you think about that idea? Because I think Representative Berenger liked that idea overall.
I don't think it's a bad idea. Again, it's going to come down to folks at City Hall, folks in the county, putting down their respective political weapons and being willing to take one for the greater region and the team. What I don't think it's going to happen or what this is going to look like is one giant overhaul all at once. I think the most realistic way to do this is a piecemeal approach, one step at a time, one foot in front of the other, because it's going to take a lot to get folks on board, get folks bought in, get folks buy-in, frankly. There's a big change. I think it's a needed and necessary change and a good change, but it doesn't mean, you know, I have a monopoly on good ideas or anybody else does.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on Politically Speaking, and we look forward to having you back as you actually deal with legislation as opposed to speculating on legislation. Representative Berenger, I think, has been on the show like 6 or 7 times, so we'll see if you can break a record over the next 48 years.
I look forward to coming back. Hopefully, I'll still be a glass half full person.
Politically Speaking is a product of St. Louis Public Radio, which is a part of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. You can find all of our stories on stlpr.org. And Nick, how can people find out more about you on the World Wide Web where you want to be found?
You can go to Twitter, follow me there. I have a Facebook page where I try to highlight some of the great events. I'll call out, the Hill, St. Louis Hills, a lot of great Christmas events coming up. And I have an Instagram page.
Big question before you leave. Have you ever taken part in Run to the Hills?
I'm not a runner. My wife is, so she's training for that next spring.
What was her best time?
Great question. We'll get her on the show and you can...
Until next time, so long. Politically Speaking is produced by Sarah Kellogg, Rachel Lipman, and me, Jason Rosenbaum. The show is edited by Fred Ehrlich. Read all of our coverage at stlpr.org. And if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to Politically Speaking by searching the term Politically Speaking on Apple Podcasts. From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.